Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey, Michael Steele podcast listeners, Michael Steele here with another quick take from the Michael Steele podcast. Check out what's going on right now.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Michael Steele podcast. We are, I told y'all, if you have a conversation with my brother Tom, you're going to sit here and you're going to take out your pad and you're going to write your pen and you're just going to start taking notes because you brought us.
It will be on the exam.
This will be on the exam, which we have every Tuesday at 2:00. So let's switch it up a little bit, because a lot of what we just talked about globally has played itself out here domestically in terms of how people perceive the president's handling of this matter. Certainly the impact on gas and oil prices here at home, that's fed the flames around inflation. And of course, on the Republican side, created more fodder to go after Biden. And Lord knows, I find it hysterical when I hear Republicans start talking about how Biden is trying to take advantage of Ukraine or this or that, just blowing completely past all conversations that Donald Trump had respective to Ukraine. So to set up the sort of domestic part of our conversation, how do you think Americans are absorbing all of it right now for Joe Biden, Republicans, and not just the global piece, but also that domestic piece as we find ourselves some 6 months out from upcoming national midterm elections?
Well, the good news is that there is a wide bipartisan agreement among voters that Ukraine is important, that we're on the right side, that NATO matters, and that the Russians should lose. Unfortunately, that domestic bipartisan agreement does not extend to the elected officials of the Republican Party,
right?
Who are, you know, just trying to make this into, you know, Joe Biden is too senile to handle this. Joe Biden doesn't know what his own policies are. You know, 6 weeks into this war, and they're still trying to pull that, you know, somehow that Biden doesn't know what he's doing. I mean, this is astonishing. The bad news is that Republican voters are so irreversibly partisan that nothing Biden does is going to matter. Right. And all that's going to matter in political outcomes is whether Democrats and independent voters come out in enough numbers to save American democracy from a party that has become a pro-Russia authoritarian party. And unfortunately, their attitude is, well, you know, the price of gas went up, so the president sucks.
Right. You just summed it up. That's exactly,
I mean, that's incredible.
That's a bumper sticker for them. Yeah.
You know, it is incredible to me. And I have almost, you know, I'm working on a piece about why I'm going to stop arguing, particularly with younger voters, for whom, you know, this is their future at stake. And they're like, well, we didn't get the climate change bill. We didn't get better, Build Back Better. We're not getting student loan forgiveness.
Totally,
well,
clueless.
Okay, I guess you're going to teach us all a lesson and live under authoritarianism for the rest of your life.
Right.
You know, good luck with that.
Right, right.
But I think it's a reminder of how sort of petty and uncivic the American voter, and I say this about both Democrats and Republicans, the most important thing in the world is happening, and it could end in flames. It could end in disaster. I mean, I don't want to, you know, be overly.
No, you're right. Worrisome. I think you're right.
But there is something going on that could end with the destruction in fire and ashes of tens or hundreds of millions of people. And the reaction among most Americans is, you know, okay, but, you know, gas. Well, there was a time, I get a lot of static when I say things like this, because, you know, it's like, well, you're an elitist. You can afford a gallon of gas. You don't care about this stuff. I'm sorry. I grew up in the 60s and the 70s and came of age in the 80s. There was a time when Americans could differentiate between the price of a gallon of gas and what was important in the world.
Right.
Exactly. You know, they could say, look, I'm, you know, I mean, you and I grew up in a time when inflation
was killing us. It was 20+%.
Here's a lesson in a thing called stagflation. When you had high unemployment, high interest rates, and high inflation all at the same time, which economists didn't think was possible.
Yep.
It was a nightmare. And yet you didn't see us throw up our hands and say, well, screw it. Democracy's toast. We don't care about what happens in the world. You know, Jimmy Carter, I mean, this is so painful, Michael, because we're, you know, to saying nice things about Biden. Now I've got to go back and say something nice about Jimmy Carter. You know, Jimmy Carter was able to function in dealing with the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan with a public that understood that although Carter was failing in a lot of other areas, this was important. This was okay. Important.
That's right.
You know, this was something that we had to deal with and that was worth. And in fact, 1980, an interesting kind of lost art in all this is that one of the things Reagan argued in 80 was, I can handle this crisis better than Jimmy Carter can.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, the actual, in terms of defense budgets and strategies and nuclear stuff, the change from Jimmy Carter to Ronald Reagan was almost nothing at all.
Right, right.
You know, people like to think it was, but Carter's the guy who starts the MX missile and Trident improvement and the stealth bomber and all that other stuff. And Reagan says, absolutely. And my big disagreement with you is we're not spending enough money on it.
That's it.
Americans now are like, well, unless it's good for my team, it sucks. And, you know, they're just not thinking about it.
You wrote what I will term as an indictment of all of that in a piece back in May of 2021 for the Atlantic entitled "The GOP Now Stands for Nothing." And in it, I just want to put two points on the table. The first was you said, quote, "American conservatism once meant something definite and tangible. You could fight those beliefs and policies. You could argue with them, admire them, or hate them, but they existed. Strom Thurmond, Ronald Reagan, Howard Baker, and Edward Brooke were not necessarily deep thinkers, and they didn't all agree on everything, but the GOP held clear lines of thought that stood as alternatives to liberalism. That is now gone. We are talking about a party that doesn't even have a platform. It can't tell you what it thinks because it doesn't know what it believes." And so that you have that piece. The second part of this, I thought, was very powerful. You noted, quote, "Most of those ideas were predicated on some basic beliefs about human beings themselves, including the conviction that human nature is fixed rather than malleable, that intellect is a better guide to action than emotion, that tradition is valuable, and that religious faith is a cornerstone of a healthy society." Those two points for me bookend so much of what we see, of what we as you know, I'm still in the GOP. I'm there because I know it pisses them off. So, you know, it's just a good place to be.
I think it's good to tell your listeners, by the way, that you and I have been at this tug of war. I've been trying to pull you out, and you've been trying to pull me back
pull
in.
You back in. Pull you out. Dude, I need somebody on the front porch with me to hold up, to keep the lights on. But you really do bookend in a lot of ways, you know, where I came in to the party versus where we are right now. And how do you see this playing out going forward? Because I think someone asked me literally 2 days ago, is it over? Is it done? And I had to hang my head and go, yeah, I don't see recovery.
The party,
the party being pretty
done,
much
Michael.
Lost.
And here, let me just renew my invitation.
Okay, here we go, snacks. Folks. Here we go.
We have snacks. I come over. We'll hang out on my deck. The independent voter party is on my back deck here in Rhode Island. Well, a couple of things. First of all, the Republican Party does believe in something, and that is staying in power. What if you had to ask, what does Elise Stefanik believe in? Elise Stefanik believes in not going back to upstate New York. That's what she believes in. The Kevin McCarthy, the texts that have been revealed over the past week really show it's a party that whose leaders say, I will say and do anything to stay in Washington. So in that sense, the party is just toast. But I want to, because you and I come from the same generation and joined up at about the same time. You know, it frustrates me when younger people say, well, you know, it was always like this. And you guys, when you guys joined in the 70s and the 80s, you were part of the problem. It's like, it's hard to tell younger voters that there was a time when Daniel Patrick Moynihan, one of the most prominent liberal Democratic senators from New York City, said in 1980 that the Republican Party is now the party of ideas.
Yeah, I remember
that. Democratic Party was exhausted, and that all of the dynamism and intellectual energy was in the Republican Party. And that's the party in 1980, I was 20 years old. That's the party I was in.
Yeah.
Now, you know, the Republicans have collapsed in on themselves. And, you know, we can sit here and do the autopsy all day long. Is it because, education, rural voters, whatever it is, the party itself now has a layer of electeds on top who are nihilists. And some of them are, I shouldn't say, the Stefanics and the McCarthys, they're nihilists. They're like, I'm not going back home. You can't make me go back home. I like it in DC, and I'm not, Josh Hawley, I wasn't a special little boy so that I could end up hanging out a shingle and probating wills in Sedalia, Missouri. I was destined for to live in DC. But I think then you do get the kook factor of Rand Paul. And that starts to then filter down to the Gohmerts and the Taylor Greens and the rest of them. And so there is no, where is this better party? One of our colleagues, and I'm not saying this to slam him because, I think he's on the side of the angels. But, years ago, David French and a bunch of us had a kind of an argument about, well, should we still vote for Marsha Blackburn in Tennessee, right? She's going to be one of the good ones, a stable. And David has said, bad idea turned out. But I am hard, other than Kinzinger and Cheney, who are the good ones? Who are the seeds of a new party? They're not there.
I get that all the time. And I shake my head. I go, they've all left or are leaving. And so.
Or the brain worms and the fear. Let me just name check one more person. George Will, who said, and I think this went by without enough kind of wow factor to it. When Will said, this is unprecedented in American history. We have a major party, the Republican Party, that actively fears and hates its own voters.
Yeah.
Now you cannot sustain a political party on a bunch of elites in DC. So it's so funny, Michael, that we get the static about the elites, and we have to. The Republican Party is a party of elites, constantly feeding bullshit to a whole followership of rubes who believe their bullshit.
They are the party not only of elitism, but they're the party of cancel culture. They have their own
snowflakery.
They're their own variation of wokeism. The frustration is palpable at this point for a lot of center right, center left Republicans, conservatives, independent voters who once aligned themselves with the party of Reagan, Bush, Eisenhower. So now you're stuck with the likes of J.D. Vance.
Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening today. Please go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review. Heck, give us 2 5-star reviews. I love it. Or catch us on Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, or wherever you get that podcast thing on. You know how that goes. Peace out.
right, America. You asked for it. Or maybe you didn't, but either way, we have to talk. You're just in kind of a crazy place right now, Mr. and Mrs. USA. So, we are going to sit down a couple of times a week and work it out between us. The way Americans do. On a podcast. Hosted by Beowulf Rocklin. Weird name. Weird news. Weird politics. Weird country. Facepalm America. Listen to Facepalm America, a podcast that laughs at America and its politics, from Beowulf Rocklin, producer of The Rick Unger Show. Facepalm America, available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and wherever you download your digital distractions in audio form.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.